Welcome back to the Junkies on a Tuesday morning. We are neck deep in free agency in the NFL right now on the Rude guest hotline. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. We're joined by John Keim. He covers the Commanders for ESPN.com. He must be a busy man these last few hours. What's up, John? Good morning.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Hey, doing
great. We're doing well. So on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the most surprised, how surprised were you at the Laremy Tunsil trade news?
Well, I was very surprised because that's not something you had heard. And the big trade we were waiting for, wondering about, was more for Trey Hendrickson, right? Like, that's the one, because he was available and you knew he would have filled a really big, hole for them. What I did know is that they seemed to be intent on finding a left tackle. And there was disappointment when Ronnie Stanley returned to Baltimore. Whether or not they would have gotten him, who knows? But like, there was disappointment because I think that was a desire of theirs. So knowing that part, I'm still surprised because didn't see that one coming. But you knew that there was a desire to fill that spot.
To me, John, it seems like kind of a no-brainer. It's obviously an upgrade. I mean, is he a perfect player? No. He's got blemishes. Most of them do. Is his character 100 out of 100? Maybe not. But the guy's been to, what, 5 Pro Bowls, 1 All-Pro team, potentially? Massive upgrade at the tackle position. What is your best guess as to why Houston let him move on?
It sounds like, first of all, he has 2 years left on his contract, and then you're starting to get into a different age range. You'll be, 32, 33? And, I think they have a lot of other young guys coming up that they're going to need to pay around that time. So I think that was that definitely sounds like a big motivation for them to do this. So I think that was number one thing. And then, listen, then you can start to pick apart someone's game, right? And, you hear his best days are behind him. Well, yeah, I mean, if you're 30, 31, 32, typically your best days are behind you in the NFL, right? The question is, what kind of level can you still play at? I think people I talk to think that he'll be good, right? And, but I do think a lot of it was contract related, to not just his, but his plus what they have coming up. This was a chance to then maximize maybe the last time you can maximize his value, perhaps.
What is your best guess as to what they'll do with Coleman? Obviously there's two options, right? You move to right tackle, you can move to guard. To me, guard makes the most sense, but I don't know. You tell me.
Yeah, I think he'd be a terrific guard, but I don't know for sure, but I think right tackle might be more of an option for them, but I don't know that for sure. You heard things third or fourth hand before free agency. That's why this move getting a left tackle wasn't shocking, but I don't know for sure what their plan is with him. What I do know is he gives you the ability to look at multiple options. That's one of the beauties of Coleman, that if you had to ride with him again at left tackle, you could, but he's probably better elsewhere. And I think, I think he'd be, and I've talked to other people during the last year who have felt the same, or not last year, during the last season, et cetera, and even after the season, that he'd be a really good guard. But I could also see right tackle being a strong possibility.
So, John, with 2 years remaining on Tunsil's deal at the time of the trade, is this like a one-year prove-it window for Peters to see what he looks like, to see whether he would entertain extending him? How does that work as far as Peters' timeline for that?
It's a lot to give up for a one-year thing, if that's what it is. So I would hope that it's not that. I would think that you look at this and say, you've got this spot locked down for the next, 4 or 5 years, and that it should result in an extension. To me, if you're going to give up the capital to do that. So that's how I would view it. But, you know, and I think, and I don't think you make this trade unless you feel he can do that. I don't think you do that. Mm-hmm.
John, do you think the fact that they have no third, fourth, or fifth round pick currently, does that basically cement Peters moving off of either 29 or 61 to get more picks in the draft next month?
So for me, it would. The problem is, who knows? Because that's not something you can even really know until the draft, until you're sitting at 26, 27, right? And who's available? I think a lot of people in those spots would like to move back, and the ideal situation is a team moves up to get a guy so they can get that fifth-year rookie contract control. To, you know, could I see him looking to do that? Yes, for sure, because in this draft, when you look at, when you hear and listen to people who know a lot more about it, that there's a lot of depth to it. I don't know that there's necessarily the high-end talent that there's been in the past, and maybe not the deep high-end talent, but there's a lot of depth among in that range. So like middle of the first, end of the first, into the third round, I don't know that there's going to be always a great disparity in the level of player you're getting. So it would make sense to do that. And that's why I say, like, you know, losing these picks, that's one thing, but is there a way to recoup some of them? And the answer is yes. And this would be one way. Whether or not they can pull it off will depend on other factors.
Talking to John Keim from ESPN.com on the Rood Guest Hotline. Rood, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. So, seems to be mixed reviews on Javon Kinlaw. How do you see him fitting into this defense? I said simply, he's cheaper, younger, and heavier than Jonathan Allen.
He is, but did you say better?
I did not.
did
you hear me say better?
No, you did not. You did not. So, but so with Kinlaw, when you watch him, like, there's a lot of inconsistencies there. With, he's 6'5" playing inside. That is, you know, tall for inside. So playing with good leverage, staying low consistently. When I watched him, like, that seemed to be something he had to deal with. But what I don't know is, what is their plan for him? And I say that because, like, you look at him, like, he has traits that are good, right? He is a big guy. He has some good length. You know, there is some power there. Could you maybe play him a little bit more as an end, as a run-stopping end? And then, you know, I talked to some people who felt like that was the idea, play him outside and then move him inside on pass downs. There is a quick, he does have a good quick get off. Like, there are times when he was playing over the nose where he'd win, but it was usually winning with a quick first step, you know? So that's the hard part. Like, you can watch him with what he did with the Jets or the Niners. And, you know, again, you're going to see inconsistencies. That's that's why the Niners moved on from him. And it's why the Jets were okay letting him go. But what I don't know, the one thing with what I know with Dan Quinn, he is willing to think outside the box. And he had, and this is brought up by, I think it was Chad Forbes on Twitter, a guy who runs like NFL Bible or something like that. Well, he brought it up. And so I'm going to echo what he said, because it's why I asked some people if they felt like this was an idea, which is, like, in 2010, when Dan Quinn was the D-line coach in Seattle, he had Red Bryant, was a defensive tackle backup, didn't play much. They put him out as an end, and he became a very good run stopper in that defense. And, you know, so I don't know if he sees him the same way or not. That's why, like, I'm kind of not reserving judgment on it, but I want to see how they plan to use him. Because one of the things that Quinn said, too, at the Combine was, just because a team used a guy a certain way last year doesn't mean that's how we see them. So those words echo. And I think, you know, Dan Quinn is very good at, like, when he was on with you guys, the one word association, Jaden Daniels, game changer, like, well, it's a wrap, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, you pay attention to what he says. And so when he says that, like, now, because of that, when you look at Kinlaw with his traits, could you do this? So I want to hear what their plans are for him, or see what their plans are for him, to see how he's really going to fit and what kind of signing it will be. I mean, they clearly need more help on that line. They don't have that, you know, they still want to get that pass rusher, et cetera. But that's with Kinlaw, though, I could see them doing. And the last part of it, too, is, you know, Darrell Tapp coached him for 3 years in San Francisco. Adam Peters was out there with him. So there's a familiarity with him. So it just makes me wonder what they see to give him not just a deal, but a 3-year deal.
Mm-hmm. John, let's talk about some of the Commanders' departures. De'Ami Brown goes to the Jags. Good situation for him. I mean, Brian Thomas is the alpha wide out there, but they lose Christian Kirk, no Evan Engram. So there should be a lot of targets to go around for him. He priced himself out of being back here with the Commanders. Yeah. How does that impact this offense going forward?
I think, well, listen, if Noah Brown, who's still out there, and I would expect him to come back, I think you're fine there. The question for Noah Brown is always durability. I would still want to add somebody else out there, but you can get a guy, if you can add more picks, you can get a guy in the draft, or you can get, I think the second wave of free agency will be interesting for this team, because I think that's where they're going to view the better shopping, be more not just cost effective, but maybe more bang for your buck in that range. So, you know, that'll be curious to see what they do there. But, like, you know, I think if Noah Brown is healthy and can play, he's going to be that guy.
Now, so, on the defensive, you know, on the defensive side, Jeremy Chinn goes to the Raiders on a 2-year deal. That's the more impactful loss. He signed
a one-year
deal here, and he really proved himself. The Raiders wanted him, gave him $16 million. Talk about Chinn leaving for the Raiders.
Yeah, and I thought he was going to be a guy that they were going to keep, and I kept hearing they wanted him back, they wanted him back. I felt like he did a nice job for them. Good size, hybrid player, can play, you know, come down in the box, play as in a linebacker type role, physical, good communicator. So, you know, can you be replace him? Well, of course, but you now have to replace him. So, you know, I think it's a loss, but how big a loss, like, remains to be seen. But I, you know, I thought going into this period, I thought he was a guy they would bring back.
John, remind me, we always know this bizarre legal tampering period thing. It's just a joke. Why don't they just call it the start of free? It's so dumb.
Yeah.
But remind me, we always know there's a flurry of activity on, you know, yesterday. What is today typically like?
I mean, you're not going to get the same big splash, and I don't know that, like, for us, ESPN, we're going to have a, you know, hours long special on day two of legal tampering. But things
still start, more signings, right? For sure.
Like, these guys have to sign a lot more players now. Some of it will be their own, and then there'll be others, you know, for sure. But yeah, there'll still be a flurry. It's just that you're going to take care of a lot of the big, quote unquote big names early in that legal tampering, because like, those are the guys that people want. But so yeah, there'll still be a flurry, but it's so different than it used to be. And you're right, like, you know, the quote unquote legal tampering, I mean, that stuff's, the illegal tampering was led to the quick start of legal tampering.
Exactly.
Hey, John, do you have an updated number on how much free agency money they still have left under the cap at this point after the Kinlaw?
You're on it, Cakes.
That's a good question. I don't have the updated number updated number exactly. But I would say going into it, it's funny because it wasn't, while it was a lot because they have so many spots to fill, it wasn't going to go as far as maybe other teams could do it, because, like, I think it was like the Patriots were right behind them for amount of cap space. Or maybe it was the Cardinals, but the Cardinals have like 15 more guys signed already. Like, that's substantial. So yeah, it was Arizona had that. So it was never going to go quite as far as what people thought. But I also, you know, it's funny because I think, like, there's certainly a feeling here that a lot of the deals that were handed out yesterday were not very good. But that's free agency, and that's probably the first day every year. It's like that. That's why a lot of these teams like to wait for that second wave.
Yep. Mm. So. Get those bargains. John, thanks as always. Yeah. We'll talk to you again soon. I'm sure you'll continue to be busy today. This John Keim covers the Commanders for ESPN.com. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, guys.
Yep. All right, buddy.
Coming up later on in the show, Joe Beninati will talk Caps with him as the Caps are on a West Coast road trip. But when we come back, we'll continue to take your calls at 800-636.
I cannot confirm or deny if this was Laramie Tunsil's theme song coming out of college. Doesn't matter now, though, because he's been in the NFL a long time.
Yeah.
Helping us understand how good the player is Washington traded for yesterday, John McClain from Houston, Texas, has covered the Texans, the Oilers, all of it. John, thanks for making time for us, sir.
My pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right.
Let's start with the basics. How good of a player is Laramie Tunsil?
Laramie is an outstanding pass protector, mediocre run blocker. And the problem that he had last season, he led the NFL in penalties with 19, I think 13, with false starts. He got to a point where when he committed a false start penalty at home, the fans would boo him like crazy. If he committed holding, they didn't do anything. Because it just got so frustrating. And one reason, he's always out there by himself on an island. He wants to get as quick of a start as he can. And some of those officials, they call it closer than others.
Yeah.
But he'll do a terrific job as protecting Daniel's blind side. And the problem with Laramie, and maybe the Commanders won't have a problem with it, when Bill O'Brien, who was coach and general manager in 2019, he was obsessed with trading for Tunsil. And he traded 2 ones and a two, and he threw in a couple of tomato cans and to get Tunsil and a couple of backups. But that's how much he wanted Laramie. And he solidified that position, and they won the division, won a playoff game, and when he wanted his contract redone, he didn't have an agent. Everybody said Laramie Tunsil does his own contracts. No, he's got three guys to help him, and they made him the highest paid offensive lineman in NFL history. And then when his next one was due, they made him the highest paid offensive lineman in NFL history. His next contract, current one, expires after the 2026 season, and he's trying to get another extension, which I'm guessing he's going to try to be the highest paid offensive lineman in NFL history. And don't know if he can get it done before the season or if they wait until after the season, but he doesn't show up in the off season except for the mandatory minicamp. He's always in shape, steps right in, solidifies the position. He had a scope last year on his knee, which he spent most of camp on the side working out on his own. But then he played really well, as he always does as a pass protector. So it's a good job, a good trade for a team with a great young quarterback on the rise. And they gave up, in essence, only three picks since they swapped fours. And I think the Commanders will be really happy that they have acquired Tunsil.
All right.
You said that he struggles a little bit with the run. What's the biggest issue with his run, Bob, run blocking?
He doesn't get paid for run blocking, and he knows it. He puts out the effort. The Texans' offensive line was one of the worst I've seen, and this is my 49th year covering the NFL, and it was just terrible. Mainly the interior. Tunsil was their best offensive lineman by far, and they've got he wasn't a bad run blocker. I just think everybody did. If you look at his run block stats, he's in the middle of the road, but it's not like, oh my God, Tunsil got stuffed. He doesn't get stuffed. he doesn't get knocked backward. So not many people pay any attention to that. And when Joe Mixon was healthy, they had a really good running game, and he ran to the left side a lot. But overall, their offensive line was terrible. It affected Stroud, and but they still won the division, won a blowout playoff game, and lost the divisional round on the road, which was, is what they've done every time they've been in the playoffs. And so people here are stunned that you'd be that bad up front and trade your guy, even if he wanted a new deal. So what? He's got 2 years left. He's not going to sit out and lose millions of dollars.
Sure. I'm curious if you think he's got guaranteed money left on the deal this year. Whenever he's going to start asking for a new contract, does that come next year?
Oh, I'm sure he'd like to get it now, because this will probably be the last one he signs at his age. Even though it's strange the way tackles now can play longer.
Yeah.
And he's got a lot of mileage, but he showed no signs whatsoever of letting up as a pass protector. He takes people on one-on-one. And sometimes, and this was blatantly unfair, I saw a fan website last night here talking about Tunsil getting beat on sacks. Well, if you watched it, he was beaten because the other side let pass rushers in as soon as the ball was snapped, and Stroud ran right in to where Tunsil was taking his guy wide, as he's supposed to do. And I don't know why they came up with that was Tunsil's fault, other than they were clueless. But I just think it's a great trade for a team on the rise. And the Texans, of course, they're trying to load up. After free agency, they're going to sign Derek Stingley Jr., their quarterback, to a new contract. And I'm sure he'll be the highest paid defensive back in history over J.C. Horn, who will become official tomorrow. And then next year, they're going to start thinking about extensions for Stroud and Will Anderson Jr. And I don't think they were interested in giving Tunsil a third extension that would make him the highest paid offensive lineman in history.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it, if you're Houston, they're a year away from having to probably pay Stroud $300 million or something, right?
Yeah, no telling what that's going to be. And, yeah, I think this time next year, if they do what they did with Deshaun Watson, they extend him after 3 years. And so that's what we all expect him to do.
Well, and talking with our friend John McClain from Houston after this massive trade Washington goes and gets Laremy Tunsil. I mean, you've watched a lot of ball over the years, John. Do you consider him a top three, top five left tackle in the NFL?
Absolutely, as a pass protector, without a doubt. And once he gets out there, Dan Quinn won't have to worry about that position. Cliff Kingsbury won't have to worry about that position. They have other things they'll have to worry about. It will not be Laremy Tunsil pass protection. Now, he's missed some games with nagging injuries, nothing serious, and he'll play hard.
Now, a lot of Cliff's designs have his tackles moving, getting out on the edges, a lot of screens. How does Tunsil perform kind of on the move?
This was a bad screen team till this past season, and he wasn't very good anyway. I've never understood why they couldn't run screens, no matter who the play callers were, offensive line coaches. But the best one they had was Laremy. Okay. He was their best offensive lineman overall. They won the division 3 times with him in his 5 seasons, won a playoff game each of those seasons. And he was, until the emergence of Stroud, and Tunsil was their best offensive player. He's still, a lot of people, based on his achievements, he's right up there. He was numbered the second best offensive player on the team. And so anything they want him to do when it comes to pass protection, he'll do, I wouldn't say effortless, honestly like he did earlier in his career. He has to work a little harder, but he's smarter.
Well, John, last one. This is breaking news. Apparently, the Texans just traded for C.J. Gardner-Johnson, the Eagles safety, and they're sending Kenyon Green, the guard, to Philly.
Yeah, Kenyon Green played next to Laremy Tunsil. He was a first-round pick, and he'll go down as the biggest bust in Texans history. He's from Texas A&M. He missed his first year. His problems, his inadequacies were exposed here by the Commanders when they just flattened him. He lost his confidence. They knocked him backward in that game. He lost his confidence, missed the next season, came back last season at left guard. He was terrible. Maybe now he'll go to another good team with a great line coach. He'll be better. But the Texans needed depth and safety because they had so many injuries there. So I like that deal because they would have cut Kenyon Green anyway.
There you have it.
Hey, what's Laramie's like personality? What's his personality like?
He sometimes he's kind of moody. I remember when he came here, when the media first time we interviewed him in the locker room, he was boring as hell. And he said, "Ask me something interesting." And somebody said, "Who's your favorite singer?" And he goes, "No, that's the kind of questions I like." So he's got a kind of a playful personality. I like dealing with Tunsil. He knows he's good. You know, he doesn't create any controversy when he's talking. Most of the time, he's cooperative. And I can't think of anything negative about him other than the fact he wants to get paid.
Hey, we all want to get paid, all of us.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Hey, John, thank you for your time, man. Always enjoy having you on.
Guys, it's my pleasure. Thank you very much.
All right, man.
The great John McClain. Give him a follow. McClain on NFL.
Old school stuff right there. He tell you, just a little boring, but I like him.
He will tell you the truth. We're going to open these phone lines up at 11 a.m., reacting to all the Commanders' moves so far. Our guy Neil Greenberg joins the program now. What up, Mr. Greenberg? How do you do, sir?
I'm doing super. How are you all doing?
We're great, man. Bro. We are great. Obviously, a lot going on in the world. I'm curious how much you are kind of rocking, paying attention to all things NFL, free agency, tampering period, blah, blah, blah.
I mean, I'm focused on it second most after March Madness. I'm getting my March Madness covers together, but... would I come on this show and not be up on the NFL comings and goings? Absolutely not.
I don't think you would, honestly, and I appreciate that. So what's been the best move to you so far? It could be league-wide.
I think the Tunsil trade for Washington was really strong. You know, I think they get one of the most valuable left tackles in football. Certainly goes a long way in protecting Jaden Daniels. So I think that was really good. I think the Geno Smith signing was – I'm probably a little bit higher on that than most. I think that could be a decent fit. But I am not being like a local guy here. I do think the Tunsil acquisition was one of the best that we've seen so far.
What is it just because of him being that left tackle that could be there for some years? Or
yeah, I mean, I think that when you look at, we've talked about this before, right? When you're looking at the teams that are in front of you, like Philadelphia, especially being so good in the trenches, you know, being able to get help on the offensive line is certainly a big move. Obviously, that has a trickle-down effect, protecting Jaden Daniels, also, you know, helping out, you know, Deebo Samuel do his thing. A lot of his work is at or behind the line of scrimmage. Not a lot, but a large part of his work is at or behind the line of scrimmage. So being able to, you know, get those type of set pieces moving. I think a protection up front is critical.
I tend to agree with you, man. I think, you know, the I find it interesting, and I'm curious if you do. The Commanders' big moves have all been via trade, and I would say even going back to the Lattimore trade at the deadline. I'd say league-wide, there's less and less good, certainly less and less great players getting to free agency, and honestly, even less and less young up-and-coming players getting to free agency. Do you see, like, the importance of this stage of the offseason kind of changing?
Yeah, because you're there's a couple of things that are at work here. One, like you said, the NFL is doing a better job of keeping its better players, so you're not having as impactful free agent classes, certainly not having, like, young impactful free agent classes. And also, I think, you know, the NFL as an organization collectively have figured out if you win in free agency, you're probably overpaying, right? Because you have to, more likely than not, you have to be the top bidder. So you're paying for services that you may not be able to get a return on in full. So I think the analytics have bared that out for a while. So I think that you have to be very strategic with what you're doing. And then the third thing is I get the sense from talking to people that this year's draft is not as strong as years past. So using draft capital in a way that gets you a guy like Debo or gets you a guy like Tunsil is beneficial because you're not going to be able to get the same caliber of player in the draft based on what you gave up. So I'm interested to see, you know, what transpires going forward. You know, I will say these two things can be true, right? Washington has done a real good job of upgrading in the offseason, and they still have a lot of work to do to upgrade their team so that they're ready to take the next step.
I agree with that. Yeah. What do you think is top of the list as far as upgrades go?
Well, they need to shore up their run defense. I don't think they've really done much to get the run defense, even to an average level in the NFL. I know, Kinlaw as an interior defenseman is a decent signing. He wasn't a very good run defender, so we'll I don't know how much he's going to help in that regard. They brought in safety Will Harris, who is okay, but is kind of an average coverage guy. So I don't think that they've really done much to improve the defense. But there's still plenty of time. I mean, there's the draft. There's other moves that they can make. And, you know, we may see these guys flourish in a system. That remains to be seen. You know, again, I think you have to give this front office, the benefit of the doubt based on what we've seen so far. And if they're not making moves, it's probably because there aren't moves to make yet that would be an impact acquisition, no matter what the route is. So I still think there's a little bit to go, but I would say the defense, looking at the defense, what they lost, what they put in, I think there's some more work to do there.
What type of move, like a defensive move, you think would help that? Like, I mean, they got Kinlaw, and he's whatever he is. Should they have to go after another guy interior, or somebody on the? Do you think somebody that played last year could help out?
I think that now we wait and see what happens in the draft. I'm optimistic that they'll take an edge rusher in the draft at some point early. I think that goes a long way to helping the defense because, again, the quarterback most important position, being able to stop the quarterback, the most important skill on the defense. So they could add some ingredients to that as well. Again, look, this is a process. I mean, the timeline was bumped up so quickly, and now, we're not really looking at this team as how do they get to the playoffs. We're looking at how do they stay competitive in the NFC title game, right? Yeah. Like that's a big change of, expectations going in. So they not only have to kind of tread water and keep be as good as they were last year, but they also have to improve because I think it's pretty clear that they're well behind some of the top-tier talent like Philadelphia, Buffalo, Kansas City, et cetera.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. There's a lot of moving parts with this, but I tend to agree with you. If they haven't made a big move yet, it's because they're not entirely sure that there's one to be made. Talking with our friend Neil Greenberg here on the Rude Guest Hotline. Rude makes the most reliable HVAC products in the DMV. You can follow Greenberg at @ngreenberg. Check out all of his work at the Washington Post. One thing I just try to caution this time of year, like, I think the declaration of winners and losers is incredibly premature, and I think people would be way better off just waiting to draw any conclusions whatsoever. You know, if you want to definitively say Jeremy Chinn's better than Will Harris, I think last year that's accurate. I think over the course of their careers, you could have a real debate. If you want to definitively say that John Allen's career has been better than Javon Kinlaw's, I think that's accurate. Allen's been the better player over the course of his career. But last year, Allen only played 5 regular season games. So I just think you could slice these apples up a lot of different ways. And to your earlier point, I think it's entirely possible Quinn Peters have a vision for guys. This is kind of their first offseason where they have inherited less and they get to decide more. Last year, they kind of took over and had what they had. This year, they're making their own decisions.
Right, and they've also shown an ability to bring guys in, coach them up, and make them very valuable pieces of the puzzle. So who's to say that Will Harris can't have a career year, right? Like, I mean, that's certainly within the realm of outcomes, and the same thing with Kinlaw. Like, who's to say he can improve and make an impact in run defense, depending on how they use him and how they teach him, et cetera. And I agree with you. I mean, the winners and losers thing, it's all subjective, right? Like, we don't know what's going to happen. And even analytically, like, you can very well take the number one covered safety from one team, put him on another team, and he could very well end the year at number 30.
Yeah.
Right? And just because of how he's used, who he's playing against, et cetera. So we won't know until we know. I think that the front office, the organization, has earned the benefit of the doubt, and this team will be improved in a lot of ways heading into game one of the regular season. Whether that's going to be enough, we'll have to find out because there's still plenty of moves to make, plenty of time. But I do think that the areas that can be improved, as we've seen with Deebo Samuel and the offensive line, et cetera, will be improved to the best of their ability, and how far that takes them will remain to be seen.
Talking with our friend Neil Greenberg here. Greenberg, I obviously, NFL is the focus of the day. We've been all NFL all day. But there's enough other stuff I want to make sure I get to with you. Let's start with hockey. Caps dropped 7 on Anaheim last night. Ovi passes up an empty netter to make the extra pass to Protas so that he can get his first hat trick, which is really pretty damn cool. Where are we at with the Caps? Where are we at with Ovi?
So I have the most likely games for Ovechkin to be April 4th and April 10th. Those are both home games. And then also April 2nd at the Carolina Hurricanes. I still do think that March 30th and April 1st games against Buffalo and Boston, respectively, are also among the most likely for it to happen. I think it's great what Ovechkin did. I mean, there's a lot of knocks on him as a player, and a lot of people are saying he's padding his stats with the empty netters, which Gretzky did also. But, to pass up a goal at this point when you're so close, because your superstar youngster can get his first hat trick, I think, you know, just says a lot of Ovechkin as a teammate, as a person, et cetera. This is just a great story for the Washington Capitals from the beginning of the year. I mean, they are a legit contender. They're fun to watch. They have a lot of neat stuff happening. And I do think Ovechkin breaks the record here. He's the consummate teammate, and he has been for forever. And, you want as many of him as possible, not because he's the greatest goal scorer, but because of everything else he does, you know, on and off the ice. I mean, he is the quintessential player that you want in your franchise.
Absolutely. And how are we feeling I mean, we're so focused on Ovi right now that, like, I almost go back and remind myself of the standings because they are just kicking everyone's ass at such a thorough pace. Like, I mean, they had that little – they lost three in a row and then had to kind of rally for some overtime wins. They have 94 points. They are 11 clear of the Panthers in the Metro – in the Eastern, and they're 12 clear of the Hurricanes in the division. Like, who are they going to play in the first round? Is it tracking to be the Rangers?
It might be, because that's usually what happens in the playoffs, right?
I know, dude. I don't necessarily but,
yeah,
know.
I mean, this is a really good team, and it's a team that isn't like the fun and gun team from the Bruce Boudreau era. It's not the grinded out team from the, you know, the Hunter Oates era. I mean, this is just a good all around hockey team that can win in a bunch of different ways. And they have a lot of talent. And, you know, if a team wants to, you know, kind of focus on stopping Ovechkin, that's certainly fine. But, you know, you also got to stop Tom Wilson and Protas and McMichael and Strom. And, you know, you just have a lot of stuff that's happening in that lineup. And I think that's really the key. I mean, Ovechkin, amazing, right? Yeah. But he is still just a piece of the puzzle that skates, you know, 17 minutes a night.
Right.
And it really, you know, you got to tip your cap to the coaching staff, but also the players for, you know, really stepping up and making this more than a one-trick pony team, right? I mean, this is a team that has depth and ability up and down the lineup, in net, behind the blue line, etc. This is a scary team, and it's going to be, you know, it's going to be a scary matchup for anybody once the playoffs start.
So I know, you see them scoring seven goals, you go, Ovi had to have at least two.
Right, that's the thing, right? Like, you know, what would your bet be if someone told you to cap score seven? You know, you'd almost take it as a lock that Ovechkin had at least one, if not two. But the fact that they can do that and he's giving up goals, like literally giving up goals, you know, tells you a lot.
My research appears if the season ended today, and it doesn't, the Caps would play Columbus in the first round. But there's a whole bunch of teams kind of fighting for that last wild card spot. Columbus, Montreal, New York, the Bruins. So we'll wait and see on that. All right, Greenberg, last thing for me. Talking with our friend Neil Greenberg via the Rude Guest Hotline. Let's make some money. Give me now it's conference championship week. I think ACC started yesterday. Big Ten probably starts today. I imagine all the big boys, SEC starts today because they all have 800 teams in their conferences. Where do we have some winners? What do we like?
Okay, you ready?
I'm ready.
I like the women's Texas Longhorns to win the championship.
The women's to win the whole NCAA title.
On the NCAA title on the women's side, yep, I think that they are undervalued in that regard.
Mm-hmm. Is it Texas A&M?
Texas Longhorns.
Texas Longhorns. Mm-hmm. And I also, if you're looking for value in like the ACC tournament, I think Louisville is an interesting pick. I know Duke is the overwhelming favorite, and that's fine. I do like Louisville as kind of someone else. And then the SEC, I am fading a lot of these teams. I like Florida to win the SEC. But in the tournament, I'm going to be fading like Alabama, Kentucky, Missouri, Ole Miss, Mississippi State. Like, I'm fading all of them. I know there's going to be a lot of SEC tournament teams in the big dance. I'm fading them. I think, though, if you're looking for value in that conference, I think Florida might be a pick to look at.
Now, Greenberg, are you aware of our guy, White Bryan, a very proud Auburn Tigers alum?
Yeah.
You did not mention Auburn.
I am. And let me say it again, fade the SEC. I think that they're going to have a letdown in the big dance. Nothing personal.
Okay,
but
it's just business.
There's going to be no roar in that tiger.
Oh, I love that line. Am I allowed to use that next week or whenever?
Of course.
Okay, thank you.
Of course.
What about the Turtles, Friday night, Big Ten tourney?
I've said this before. I'm a big Maryland fan. I think that they're one of these teams that could have a deep run in the tournament. I think right now they're a four seed, so they may not sneak up on a lot of people. But I think that Maryland is certainly a team that I'm looking at right now to pencil into the Elite Eight.
JP will lose his mind.
Yo.
We won't be able to deal with him, man.
I made it clear. If they get to the Sweet 16, I'm going, I assume for work purposes. If they get to the Sweet 16 and they're playing Duke in New Jersey, I'm not going for work purposes. I'm going full college JP, everything I got. I'm going to be booing people. I'm going to be yelling bleep you at people. It's going to be everything I got, Greenberg.
Well, I think, I said this before, I like the Terps. I think they're sneaky good.
Their guards
go
are
under
good.
The,
Everybody
gonna
talks
go
about
under the radar.
Their guards are good.
Yeah, I think Maryland could do some stuff in the tournament.
Now, didn't you win your overall post predictions thing last year? Don't I remember that right?
2 years ago.
2 years ago.
I did, because I had San Diego State in the final. Everyone thought I was nutso.
That's wild. They got there, and they got their
ass
kicked.
Yeah, of course they got there. Last year was chalky. Like, I don't really do well in chalky tournaments because I take risks, like calculated risks. But usually if there's a chalky tournament, the next year has a lot more madness to it. So, I'm pretty hopeful that I can, we'll talk about it next week, but I got some things in the works.
All right. Give me the madness. Thank you, Greenberg. Appreciate your time, bud.
All right. Love you guys. Talk
to
you soon.
Take care, Green.
That's our guy, Neil Greenberg. Give him a follow at @NGreenberg. Thank you for joining us via the Rude Guest Hotline, but it's fun talking to Greenberg this time of year, 'cause he's all about not necessarily long shots, but getting a little more value for your money. And if you're looking at who's going to be cutting down the nets this March, get in on all the tournament action at ESPN Bet Sportsbook. Fading the SEC is a hell of an idea when we get to next week in the NCAA tournament. I also really like that Texas Longhorns women's bet, because everybody's going to be thinking it's South Carolina. A lot of good teams out there. And honestly, there's action right now with all these conference tournaments. You got plenty tonight if you're looking. Richmond Davidson. ACC's heating up in earnest. Virginia. UVA Georgia Tech is today. South Carolina Arkansas. That means Coach Calipari's coaching 1 o'clock on Wednesday in the SEC tournament. Coach Cal ain't really used to that time slot, man. Notre Dame Carolina this afternoon. Carolina is not a tournament team. Let me be clear about that. Minnesota Northwestern tonight. I mean, the big boys are heating up. Ohio State, Iowa. I don't know if either of those teams have a chance to get in, but if they do, they need a win. The Hoyas, their only chance for an NCAA tournament is to win the Big East tourney. That begins today. They are 4.5-point favorites over DePaul. DePaul stinks. You like to think the Hoyas can at least win that one. And then B-Mitch, a classic ACC rivalry tonight. Stanford versus Cal. The tree versus the Bears. I mean, everybody's thinking ACC when they watch that. Maybe you like Cal to pull off the upset. Plus 240. Whatever it is you're looking for, ESPN Bet has you covered. Plus, you bet $20 on the team you think's going to win it all. And if they do, you'll win a share of $2 million in bonus bets. That's awesome. You could also receive $10 in bonus bets for every win your team has in the tournament. Download the ESPN Bet Sportsbook app to get started today. Make sure you're checking out Maryland and Virginia. Odds and lines are subject to change. Must be 21 plus. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See the app for details.
Let's get to the Rude Guest Hotline if it ain't rude, it ain't right, and talk to our guy Albert Breer, SINMMQB. So I saw an attribution to you, Albert, and I wanted to get you on to ask about this today, that you've been told the Commanders offered Ronnie Stanley, the left tackle who signed with the Ravens, for $20 million a year, 24
yeah.
per, and he stayed in Baltimore for less money. What can you tell us about that?
Well, I can tell you that obviously they couldn't officially make an offer, but you know, I know a couple teams were 24 or more, or were over 24 million per. Yeah, I think the Commanders and the Patriots were two of the teams that were there. The Chiefs, I think, were a little bit closer to where the Ravens were, at about 20 million per. And these things sort of get around over the course of a couple of weeks leading up to free agency. So that's all it is. I mean, I think, you know, again, like the Commanders and Patriots were planning pretty big swings at Ronnie Stanley. So, you know, they sort of got left where they got left there. You know, Ronnie makes the decision to stay in Baltimore, and then they turn around and they're able to get their left tackle and Laramie Tunsil.
I mean, it's obviously a great culture in Baltimore, something that you're hoping to change around here in D.C. It's something we talked about after the season they had last year, if the perception around here has changed that guys wouldn't come play here. Do you feel like that has changed? Is this just a case that Stanley wanted to stay put, or was it something that he was still a little bit miffed at what Washington is?
I mean, I think Stanley and Chris Godwin are sort of similar in the sense that, like, they're both third contract guys, right? And, like, they both have made a lot of money. And when you already have a lot of money in the bank, doesn't mean you're not still chasing the next dollar. You are. I think you always are to some degree. You know, but you might be willing to give up a little bit because you've already made some money, you know? So I think that's probably what it was, you know, and it's not like I haven't talked to him directly about this, but I think that was probably part of it for Ronnie is, you know, he's got a comfortable situation in Baltimore. They've been really good. They're going to continue to be really good. And, you know, like being able to stay at the number he's able to stay at, he can trust that they're going to be able to take the savings there off of what he may have been able to make in a Washington or a New England and make the team around him better. So, you know, really, I don't think it's any knock on anyone else. It was just he's got a good situation. He's made a lot of money. And so if it meant taking a little bit less, I think he was willing to take a little bit less to stay in that good situation. That said, I mean, I think Washington is a very attractive destination for teams right now. I don't think there's any question about that.
Albert Breer, senior NFL reporter and lead content strategist at the MMQB. So what they ended up doing at left tackle is actually maybe even better in terms of production, but man, did they pay a lot, right? Laremy Tunsil, and I mean comparatively speaking, they give up a 2, a 3, and a 4 with a 7 over the next two drafts. They did get a 4 back to help cushion the blow. And then they get Tunsil at 21 per against the cap for the next couple of years. He'll probably want an extension after this season, presumably. But if you would have gotten Stanley in this hypothetical at 24 and kept all your picks, I would have taken that. I do think Tunsil's a better player, but I want to get your thoughts on, you know, what they tried to do and what they ended up having to do, because Peters, who works in the shadows, seemed to go outside the box here.
Yeah, and I think it's like a honestly you know, I think it's sort of reflective of how hard it is to fill that position if you don't have one. I mean, you see what the Chiefs had to do, which was bring in a guy who wasn't ever a full-time starter in San Francisco at $15 million a year. Dan Moore, who was, you know, about to be replaced in Pittsburgh, got $21 million a year in Tennessee. So I like, just, it's a supply and demand thing. And that's one position where it's just really, really hard to find a guy who can be your long-term answer. And it's rare that they become available. So I think that the fact that they were able to get him at the price they were able to get him at was actually pretty good. I think if you do like the draft value chart, whatever, it winds up equating to a low first round pick, what they gave up to get him. And the opportunities presented itself because of some stuff that happened in Houston, but I don't think he's a bad guy. Like, I think he'll come in and as long as you have the right culture around him, he'll be fine. You know, it's a little bit like Trent Williams, and you guys can obviously relate to this, where there were a ton of questions about Trent when he was in Washington, right? And, you know, then he gets to San Francisco. You know, we haven't heard is anything bad about Trent Williams, you know? So I think if you're Adam Peters, you sort of look at your own experience having gone through that in San Francisco, where you traded for Trent Williams in early 2020, and Trent's going on, you know, 6 years now of all pro play out there in a really good environment. You know, now that the Pitt Commanders have that sort of environment, you know, I think it gives them the freedom to take swings on opportunities like this. But guys that, like, I mean, you know, look, like, again, like, not a bad guy, but might not be the leader of your program when you bring him in.
What have you made of their moves overall so far in free agency, some trades that they've made? I've probably been fine with just about everything they've done except for maybe $15 million a year for Kinlaw, but what's your take on what they've done so far?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Kinlaw thing is, again, like, just sort of a guy who you view as a scheme fit, you know, and a very specific role you're going to have for him. And, you know, he hasn't lived up to his where he was drafted, of course, but he's still a good player, you know, and you have an idea of what you're going to get from him, which is, you know, sort of the way that they built the team last year and bringing all the guys that they had background with. And, you know, I don't need to go through every name for you guys. You guys know all the names. But I think it's another one of those, you know what I mean? Like where you do have an idea of what you're getting because Adam Peters was with the guy before and has experience and there is some system familiarity there in what Kinlaw has done in the past. Outside of that, like I think, you know, this is a good, good example what the Commanders have done. And it goes back to, you know, November when they traded for Lattimore, which was really a move for 2025, more than it was a move for 2024. You know, bringing in guys at premium positions in Lattimore and Debo and Laramie Tunsil. And that happens because you did a good job in year one under Adam Peters and Dan Quinn and building the roster up and creating an environment where you don't have to press needs now. You know, so when an opportunity comes along, you are loose enough to be able to take a swing on a guy like this. You know, it's, I think if they don't draft as well as they did last year and beyond just Jaden being able to get a Brandon Coleman, a Mikey Sanristil, a Johnny Newton, who they think is going to be something, a Luke McCaffrey, it does give you the freedom to take more chances and to do different things with some of your draft picks because you don't need, you know, the margin for error where you've got 10 or 12 picks and you need to fill five positions with starters.
Albert Breer getting us up to speed on the Commanders as we are now about an hour and 20 minutes away from the official league year starting.
Oh, yeah.
Anymore?
The shelves are already bare, I think, right?
I was going to say, I don't even know if that means anything anymore, but we're an hour and 20 minutes out. Before we let you go, we only have about 30 seconds, but I just want to get your thoughts really quickly as best you can sum it up. Is Trey Hendrickson still an option for Washington, and what would that market look like?
Yeah, I mean, the Bengals want a one, but I don't think the one's going to be out there for him because he's 31 years old, and he's going to require a new contract. So I still don't think they would move him for anything less than a two, though. So you have to make that determination if you're Washington, where, you know, you've already, you know, I mean, I don't have it in front of me, but they got what, a one, a two, a four, a six and a seven or something like that,
exactly
right?
Exactly right, yep.
Right, so like, you know, you're looking at it if you're them and you're saying, do I really want to deplete myself of another draft pick? I think that's a question. And I think the other thing about it is, you know, if you are the Commanders, you know, you're probably looking at it and saying this is a really deep draft at that position. So we could draft guys with our first two picks and potentially hit on starting level players at that position at a much cheaper rate than flipping the two for Hendrickson. So I think it's something they consider. But, you know, I think there's a case to be made for just drafting and developing your own at that position too, based on what's in the draft class.
Albert, always appreciate your insight. Thanks for the time, man.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Be good. There's Albert Breer, SI and MMQB on Grant and Danny here on The Fan.
15 minutes away from the official start of the legal tampering period of the National Football League. It's Kevin Sheehan Show right here on the Team 980. We're always live and free on the Odyssey app as well. And Al Willingham, Denton Day, sitting in for Kevin. He's back with you on a Wednesday. Right now, we go out to the guest hotline where we find one of the absolute best talking all things NFL draft, NFL draft analyst for The Athletic. Our pal Bruce Feldman joins us right now. Bruce, happy free agency, my friend.
Good morning, guys. Good to be on with you.
Yes, indeed. So, wanted to ask you about a couple of different positions of need in the draft for the Commanders. Washington now in a position where obviously defensive end and edge rush help is at the top of their list. You don't want to leave free agency without starting answers at that position. I always say you treat free agency like the draft doesn't exist. If Washington isn't able to, you know, strike on a marquee name in free agency, who are a couple of guys at the edge rusher spot at pick number 29 where you think, if he's there, Washington's got to run in the cart?
Yeah, I think the challenge there is you're really at the end of the first round. Guys who I could see, you know, perhaps Mike Green from Marshall could fall. He has some character concerns for some off-field question marks about him from his days in high school and at UVA before he went to Marshall. I mean, he's a very talented player, but I think that's where it's on NFL teams. They're going to have to really do their due diligence. Another guy who's super athletic and was productive at Tennessee, James Pierce Jr. I mean, ran at 6'5", ran 4.47. He has got, I want to say, like some, you know, Brian Burns kind of capabilities, but I think there's a little bit of maturity and character concerns about him too. And so those are guys I could see possibly being there once you get past that. I don't know where, you know, Donovan Ezeraku from Boston College is not as long and he's not as explosive an athlete, but he's
the production's out of the charts.
The production is really good. You know, mature kid. I think he's a playmaker. I think he could be there. You start getting, you know, into that range. I think those are the guys who I think will be interesting to see where they end up. You got a couple of Ohio State edge guys, JT Tuimoloau, Jack Sawyer, really productive players that played a lot, bigger edge guys. They don't run like the guys I just mentioned, but I think, you know, they're really solid players. I think they're probably more early second round guys than late first. You know, Landon Jackson's a bigger edge guy. He's 6'5 plus, 275, and he jumped out of the combine. I mean, he was a guy who started his career at LSU. I think he's a really good football player. I'm actually surprised people looked at him as a mid to late second round guy. I don't think he'll sneak in the first round, but again, he's one of those where athletically he was really, really impressive in Indy, and he's got a big frame. I mean, he could carry 280 pounds and still move really well. I think those are, you know, that's kind of the discussion point of what you have, you know, in that range. Because I don't think the Georgia guys, Michael Williams, they're not going to fall all the way down. You'd have to move up to get them.
Bruce, how far is the gap between some of the players you just mentioned and Abdul Carter?
You know, Abdul Carter, I think, is the surest thing. I mean, he's not a huge edge guy. He's in the 255 range. He is a really dynamic athlete. Obviously, he didn't work out in Indy. I think, you know, he's a little bigger than Jalen Walker. I think Jalen Walker, I don't think there's a huge gap between the two, to be honest. Wow. I think that Jalen Walker was surrounded by, you know, Penn State had a really good D-line. Georgia had even more guys around there, so you're just not playing. We've seen a bunch of these guys go to the Eagles, no less, and they end up, you know, flourishing in the NFL, who were really impressive, highly thought of guys at Georgia, but they were just so deep there. I just don't think they were piling up the stats some of these other guys did. But I don't think there's a massive gap between Abdul Carter and Jalen Walker.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. At 29, like, Washington is just going to be in an interesting spot. Do you agree? I saw Daniel Jeremiah tweet this out maybe about a month ago, right before the combine, that in this class, from picks 20 to 60, you could be getting a similar type player in terms of skill. Do you feel that way about it? And if that's the case, would you be an advocate for trading back from 29, depending on who's there, obviously?
Yeah, obviously, I agree with what DJ said. I think if you have, to me, there's a lot of good players who may end up in the top of the third round. Mm-hmm. I don't think, you know, like, unlike last year where, like, the receiver crop was, there was a bunch of guys in there. I don't know, like, Tedarone McMillan, I like, has like elite ball skills, and he's over 6'4". He's like a former volleyball player, but, you know, he's not going to run. He didn't run in the combine. I heard he was not going to run any, you know, in anything. Wow. And, you know, maybe he's a 4.65 guy. I don't know. Like, Puka Nacua, I'm not saying he's the exact same type of player, but it's not like Puka tested great either. This is a bigger guy. And you know, kind of where I'm going with that is I just think that, you know, this is kind of a different draft. There's good tight ends. I think there's good running backs. I actually think it's a pretty good O-line draft, but it's not a good, you know, there's not a ton of star power. The quarterbacks are not great. I think there's Cam Ward, and then I think, you know, there's Shador a little further down, maybe, you know, maybe Jackson Dart. But because of it, I just think when you look at what's the top of the draft, we're talking about, you know, Travis Hunter, who's kind of a unicorn in how he played from CU. You got Abdul Carter, you got the Georgia guys. I think Mason Graham's a really, really good football player. And then you got, like, a bunch of O-linemen who I think are good, but some of the better ones are like, is he a tackle? Is he a guard?
Yeah.
You know, because it just, It's kind of a different kind of draft, just because there's a cluster of guys. And we start out by talking about the edge guys. You have three guys, I think, two guys with some legit character concerns going in. You got a player like Shamar Stewart, who's an elite athlete and tester, but again, very little production, 4.5 sacks in 3 years. I mean, he was a five-star guy out of high school who you see why he would be a five-star the way he tested at the combine, but you know, he might be a top 10 pick, and that I think that's a big roll of the dice there.
Bruce, how do you feel about Will Johnson? It felt like after 2023, he was one of the best corners in college football, and then because of the injuries at Michigan this year, it feels like he's now falling in all the mock drafts I'm looking at.
I think there's a little bit of concern at how fast is he. Remember, this was the MVP of the national title game when Michigan won at the end of the 2023 season. He's got good size. The guys I know who've coached him think he is quarterback smart. Like they think he's just, he gets football. He's one of the smartest corners you're going to come across. You know, he's physical. I think the question is, would he run 4.52? Now, the people I talked to at Michigan say he's a much better athlete than a lot of these people are trying to say he is. I think he's a really good football player. I don't think he's Travis Hunter. Like he's in a lot of ways, he's opposite of Travis. Travis Hunter is super twitchy and not stiff at all. He's probably about as flexible and instinctive and as you get as a cornerback with amazing ball skills. Will Johnson has good ball skills, but I don't think Will Johnson, there is a little bit of concern, is he stiff? You know, could he end up actually as a safety down the road? It wouldn't shock me. I mean, he's big enough. He's got some physicality. I think, again, there's guys like this where I think they're really good football players, and then you look back and it's like, okay, how healthy was he this year? Was that some of the reason why the tape this year wasn't as good as what some people were hoping for? Again, it's kind of a weird cornerback draft because you have another guy in Savon Revel, from East Carolina. Most people haven't seen him. He's one of my freaks list guys. And then he hurt his knee and missed most of last year. I think if he was healthy, he would be a guy who might be a top 20 pick in this draft. And so, you have two high-level corners who missed a lot of last year, were not healthy, and I think that, that's let the buyer beware. But I think sometimes some of the draft chatter may end up being wrong on these guys, and they may end up going higher than they're probably we're talking ourselves out of them when maybe NFL teams aren't.
Bruce, how late do you think Washington can get a plug-and-play guy along the offensive line? Talking about either a tackle or guard. And one guy in particular that I've been kind of crushing on just because he's just a war daddy, I describe him as, is Tate Ratledge from Georgia.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely looks the part with the mullet and everything. I mean, Georgia has a couple of guys like that in the O-line who, another guy was like, one of our freestyle guys who was state champion wrestler. I don't know if he lost in 3 years. I mean, I think those guys, Ratledge is a tall guard. I mean, he's every bit of, 6'6", 320. And, there's some, I could see some Landon Dickerson, now he started out, he was at Alabama and then he was with the Eagles where I think he's just a big, tall, nasty guy. I could see him having a really, really good career. I think he's one of those guys, like you said, could plug in. I don't think there's anything fancy about him. But remember, look what he went up against every day at Georgia. From the time he got there. I think that bodes well. I don't know if he is my guess is he's a late second round guy because there's, nothing flashy. But I think, I could see him doing well. I would be surprised if he does not have a really good NFL career just because of what he saw every day. You have another guy, Jared Wilson, who, everybody knew, everybody kind of found out about him because he ran in the 4.8s as an offensive lineman, but a Georgia center who I think, he played behind some really good players and he played around some really good players. I could see him, going a little earlier than probably people were expecting. I could see both guys maybe ended up in the second round.
Bruce, thankfully in this market, we don't have to worry about quarterback this year after Jaden Daniels. First time in our lifetime we haven't had that issue. But, I'm still intrigued by the position, and I'm a little bit of a degenerate. So if I were to set the over-under line at 2.5, how many quarterbacks go in the first round? Are you going over-under that number?
Yeah, I would think there will be a third. I think it'll be Dart. I think somebody will move up to kind of get him. Here's what I know people really like about him. He's incredibly tough. And they think he's a good leader. He's a decent athlete, more than decent. And I thought he looked pretty good at the combine. I don't think he is a top, you know, like I saw somewhere, you know, in the last couple of days, somebody was like, yeah, somebody's going to trade up to try to take him at like 8. And that surprised me when I heard, or somewhere in the top, you know, top 12. Like if he was in last year's draft, I think he goes ahead of Spencer Rattler, but I don't think he goes anywhere, you know, near the other guys. But I think he and Tyler Shuck are the next best option. I wouldn't be surprised if some teams had either one of those guys above Shador on their draft boards. I don't, you know, Shador is smart and he's pretty accurate and he's definitely a tough kid, but he's limited athletically. He's nowhere near as athletic as those other two guys. You know, he had a worse offensive line than both of them, but you know, I wouldn't be shocked. I'd be a little more surprised if Shuck, somebody jumped up to get him because he's going to be 26 years old. And also he has a significant injury history. He just could not stay healthy when he was at Texas Tech before he went to Louisville. But he's got good arm talent, and he's big, and he can run. And, you know, it's just like, what are your needs and how desperate are you depending on how the rest of this, you know, quarterback free agent market shakes out?
It's going to be interesting. Bruce, I'll let you go on this, my friend. I got six prospects here for you. We'll do a little hypothetical, Harry. If they're on the board at 29 for Washington, based on what you know about their needs and the background info you've been able to gather on these guys, if these six are there, who's the pick? Jihad Campbell, the linebacker out of Bama. Siobhan Revelle, the corner. Josh Simmons, the tackle. Josh Connolly, the tackle. And then Donovan Ezeraku and James Pierce. If you're Washington, and all of those guys are sitting there for you at 29.
Jihad Campbell, I think he's the best player of the group. He is a really explosive athlete. He's not Micah Parsons, but I think he's in that spirit where he could be probably a pro bowler at two different spots. I think he could definitely as an off-ball linebacker, but also as an edge guy. From, you know, I remember talking at midseason to Kane Womack, who's the defense coordinator at Alabama, and he was like, he's the one guy we have here who was just like, when Alabama always has like two or three of them on defense, they didn't really have that last year. He was about as close as they come, and he kept getting better and better and better. I think they were hoping he might stay another year, but he just, you know, he performed so well that he just kept blowing up. He could, you know, there's no concerns about him. I'm not saying the other guys have red flags, but you either have guys coming off injuries, guys with character concerns. I just don't see that guy, Campbell, being there as late as when Washington picks.
Yeah, I agree with you. Super freak. I think he would fit perfectly in this Dan Quinn defense. And knowing what DQ did with Micah, he would be a guy that
I'm sure,
about trading up for him even? I mean, is he that?
I would, but look, I mean, piece? I feel like your fan base has worn it so long of like, it just like the franchise that couldn't get out of its own way. And then all of a sudden now in the last like 2 years, you know, start with Terry McLaurin ending up there. And then you just kind of start rolling through, like, you know, Daniels turned out to be like a slam dunk. Then you get Debo. You know, I love what they did last year. Like Sainer still, I thought, is a great football player, and they got, you know, they're doing a lot. You know, it's like all of a sudden now it's flipped. So, you know, if somehow they get Campbell, I mean, I don't know how high you'd move after. My guess is you'd probably have to move up 10 spots to get him, maybe even more than that. I don't think he gets out of the top 20. If he does, a bunch of people, I think, have screwed up. But, you know, we'll see. Crazy stuff happens on draft day.
We'll see. Bruce, appreciate you as always, man. Great work. Love following your stuff. Appreciate you giving us some time.
Always a pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me.
That is Bruce Feldman, one of the absolute best, talking all things NFL draft. Check out his work at theathletic.com. Final hour of power coming up here on the Kevin Sheehan Show. Chris Russell joins you at 1 o'clock. When we come back, though, it's the official start of the legal tampering period in the National Football League. Breaking news coming your way all hour here on the Team 980.
Live from West Palm Beach in sunny Florida, Grant and Danny on the road, although Danny will not be here until tomorrow morning as he is fighting a bug, but he's now on the mend. He is healthy enough that he has decided that he is going to make the trek a little bit behind us. We are brought to you today and every day by our friends, the law firm Condori and Murrah. They will draft your last will and testament, set up a trust for you, or put together a medical power of attorney. Huge D.C. sports fans. They'll be at opening day coming up. They're looking forward to all the Nats content that we've got in the days ahead. Schedule a free consultation with their attorneys today. Go to kmlawyers.com. Be sure to let them know that we sent you. That's kmlawyers.com. We are pleased right now to be joined on site to kick off our spring training coverage by the president of baseball operations for the Nationals, Mike Rizzo. Mike, it is great to see you again.
Welcome to West Palm Beach.
We are happy to be here. It's a long time coming. You know, it's tough sitting back in the cold, watching the games, scrolling box scores. But you guys have been working hard, getting a lot done.
We have gotten a lot done. It's been a really busy spring training, you know, backfields into mornings and game times. And we've had a couple of split doubleheaders already. So, yeah, we've been busy.
What's impressed you so far this spring from the guys?
Well, it's just, you know, the kind of camaraderie that they've made already. The feel of the clubhouse is great. The veterans have kind of seamlessly came in and have kind of made working hard with a smile and you know, going through their paces and getting ready for the season.
Mike, I've been talking to you for years, spring training and over the air during the season, and the message is kind of always the same. Like, you don't really think of it as you guys are rebuilding or not in the mode of winning, right? But the last couple of years, you guys have been trying to build up the system, and occasionally that means still trading pieces off. Back-to-back years at 71 wins. Although last year, I think you guys would have won more than that had you have retained the roster. You made some growth. Where do you see this team this year? Is this now a club that can get over that 500 hump and really compete, or where do you see you in the build?
Well, we're going to compete each and every game. You know, we've got a tough division that we're going to grind it out against some really good teams. But, you know, people, you know, the teams we play, they know when we've played them. And I think that that showed up last year. You know, we had some success against the Braves and played some close games against the Phillies and the Mets and you know, the rest of the, you know, the tough National League. So, you know, they know we're coming. We, you know, we think that that we can compete against anybody, and we're just going to grind it out and play every day. You know, the most important game is today's, and we want to win today's game, and you know, at the end of the season, we'll see where we're at. We'll let the chips fall where they may, but we're here to compete and win every game.
One of the guys that I think a lot of Nats fans are excited to see this year is Dylan Cruz, obviously. How important was it to get him that cup of coffee in the bigs last year so that he's able to come in with a little better understanding? He's gone through at least a little bit of a big league season and has seen the pitching at that level.
You know, I think it's important. You know, you hate to rush a player to the big leagues for the wrong reasons. But, you know, for the right reasons, we got him some time last year at the big league level. And, you know, we thought he belonged. We see this year that you know, he's going to be a good player. It builds a bond between those guys who come up together and kind of hang together and you know, build that camaraderie in the clubhouse and on the field.
Cruz, a college World Series champion at LSU, the number two pick in 2023, not even 2 years removed. And here he is with big league experience, you know, about to spend a full year in the major leagues. Mike Rizzo, the president of baseball operations of the Nats, is with us. Going into the offseason, before it started, like, what were your goals? What did you think you might be able to accomplish? And how many of those things did you get to check off the list?
We thought we'd had a pretty good offseason. You know what I mean? We wanted to come in, and we looked at what happened last year, and you know, we were really encouraged about our young pitching, and I think that, you know, part of the young pitching is also young defense, and we played poorly defensively last year, I thought. So we wanted to shore up that end of the game. So, you know, defensively, you know, we went out and got a Gold Glover at first base, which we think will help all our young infielders. Paul DeYoung, that you can count on to catch the ball and make plays and that type of thing, and then to go along with a year under their belt with all three outfielders, I think you're going to see a dynamic defensive outfield. You know, with Wood, Young, Gray, Alex Call, and then you got Hassel behind him, and Pinckney, and Dylan Lyle. So, you know, we're pretty flush with good athletic defensive outfielders. You know, CJ, the first half, CJ Abrams. You know, that's the defensive guy we need at shortstop. Louis made a big jump defensively last year, and we see that. Scott's getting a little bit better, even from what he was last year. So I think that we went out and shored up the defense. We got two, you know, veteran middle of the lineup guys in Lowe and Josh Bell. We think he'll take a little onus off the young hitters and take a little weight off their shoulders to get some veteran guys in the middle of the lineup and, you know, kind of attack the bullpen with some good power arms that we think that can control the back end of the game.
And it seems like, to me, you'd have to be excited about flipping a reliever, even a good one, in Robert Garcia out west to get an everyday first baseman, Nathaniel Lowe. That does not happen very often. It seems like Michael Soroka is off to a great start. Could be a flyer that ends up netting you a strong reward. But was that kind of the philosophy, like, let's get creative here? Or were there other guys that you tried to make a push for in terms of the big money? Because I'll just say, for me personally, I thought this was an off season where maybe you guys start spending even more than you did. Baseball Ops does a really good job of filling this roster out. But are we still a year away from that, or is that a case-by-case thing?
You know, I think that's an organic thing. Everyone mentions the worst thing. Well, the worst thing happened organically. He was a guy that we felt at that time we needed to learn how to, you know, is, you know, where we think we're going to, you know, make our hay and grow. And so it was going to take us a special fit for us to go after that type of player, pay top dollar for him, and to give up a draft pick and international money. So you know, none of those players that we went after, you know, kind of filled all those voids for us. And you know, we decided to go, you know, at first base we went with a guy that's, you know, a 28 year old guy with a Silver Slugger, a Gold Glove, and a World Champion. We like where it ended up at the end of the winter.
The big addition this year in the rotation, Mike Soroka. Last year he kind of struggled as a starter, did well out of the pen. What did you guys see that made you think he can be a starter? And obviously in spring training, he looked fantastic.
Well, spring training, like I'll always remind everybody, but he's got good stuff. He's got great stuff. And you know, the thing that most impressed me about him was when we met with him, he's a big-time competitor, man. You know, he really gets after it. And we remember him. I remember him in his Brave days, did all the research on him when he was with the White Sox, you know, in a really tough situation where he got relegated to the bullpen, took it like a man, and kind of reworked his stuff, his delivery, and his pitch arsenal, and had a really strong finish. And when we talked to him, he was so passionate about being with us because we are going to allow him the opportunity to be a starter. He had a lot of opportunities to go to a lot of different places as a you know, back end reliever, and we allowed him they trusted us enough to he gets after it like he's been getting after it since the day he walked in here.
9 strikeouts, 1 walk in his 7 spring innings. I know, just spring training. You can tell Mike's like, yeah, that's nice. Let's see what he does in April. Mike Rizzo on Grant and Danny here on your flagship home for the Nats, 106.7 The Fan. Staying in the rotation for a second. Seems like it's a two-horse race for the 5th starter job. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but Hurs and Parker possibly. The other 4 seem pretty entrenched. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think the 4 seem entrenched. I think it's I look at it as a three-man competition: Parker, Hurs, and Sheno. I think they all have good stuff. They pitch differently, but are ready to make the jump and impact the team also.
Power's been something that this team has kind of struggled with the last couple of years. You added some power bats. DeYoung's hit a lot of home runs in his career. Josh Bell as well. Do you feel like you guys have improved that enough that you're happy with that now?
Yeah, we think that, with the couple of the additions we make, you know, JB can hit some home runs, as can Lowe, as can DeYoung. But, you know, we think that our young core guys are going to facilitate, add those, you know, 3 or 4 veteran bats. I think that we have improved ourselves.
Do you feel like last year you guys were really aggressive on the base paths? Is that something you want to continue to do? Obviously, sometimes running into outs was a bit of a problem, but I thought overall you guys were really aggressive stealing bags. Is that
most steals in baseball, 223 last year.
Is that something that you want to continue to be?
Yeah, I think we have to be patiently aggressive. I mean, we have to go first to third, second to home. We have to, you know, balls in the dirt. We have to take the extra 90 feet. Stealing bases, I think that's part of our DNA on the roster to do so. So I think that, for us to go away from that part of our offense would be silly. We have to be smarter to do it. Smarter, though, in the way we do it. You know, if we limit teams to 27 outs and we don't make outs on silly outs on the bases, I think that that's going to just add to the way we compete and the way we win games.
number one in the sport in steals last year, and in caught stealing. When you run, that happens. But 73, obviously, way too many times getting thrown out on base for Mike Rizzo's liking. We mentioned the power, trying to build on 135 homers as a team last year. A guy that can both run and hit, James Wood. It just feels like the possibilities for him are limitless. And maybe it's not this year in his first full year in the majors, but what have you seen from him this spring? I mean, he seems like the guy that's going to put some butts in seats this year and really give people something to watch.
Yeah, he's a special player. You know, he's got a full tool bag, and he can hit, and he can hit with power, and he's working so hard on making the adjustment to left field on defense. He runs the bases well, and just scratching the surface, I think, of what they can do as big leaguers.
Mike, we're looking forward to a few days of baseball ahead.
Good to see you, man. Thanks for coming by.
My pleasure, guys. Always a pleasure.
Mike Rizzo, president of baseball ops with the Nationals, on Grant and Danny. John Bates re-signed with the Commanders for a 3-year deal. Going to join us live on the show in about 20 minutes. You're listening to The Fan.